Hello, Vancouver. Welcome to Cult from the Embassy, the culture radio show from your favorite campus newspaper. It's Thursday, March 1st, 2018. I'm Alamdi Olanion, a staff writer at the Embassy.
And I'm Eve O'Day, also a staff writer at the Embassy. This show is broadcasted from CITR 101.9 FM, located on the ancestral, traditional, and unceded territories of the Musqueam people.
This week on the show, we talked, or shall we say Eve, ranted for 30 minutes about the Oscars. The Oscars are coming up this Sunday, March 4th.
Film Society member Jin Lee spoke to us about her club.
And we also talked to Angela O'Donnell, who's a staff writer at the UBC, about the maybe great Ponderosa cake conspiracy.
It's a great conspiracy.
Yeah, it's on the covers of the UBC this week, so you should check it out. First off, we're going to go into our Oscars Roundup with Eve and photo editor Patrick Gillen. Here's the show.
I'm Eve O'Day.
And I'm Olamdi Olanion. Today, I guess we're going to talk about Oscars, right?
It's like the Super Bowl of cinema, except it's totally subjective.
In the studio with us as well is our boy, Patty G.
Yeah, I'm Patrick Gillen.
And what do you do for the Embassy?
I'm the photo editor at the UBC,
nice.
So I know nothing about film.
Why were you talking about photo?
I'm really glad you're here then. So on Sunday, March 4th, it is the 90th Academy Awards.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
90th. Wow, that's been a long time, right? When was like the first one?
1927, or maybe 28.
That's pretty dope.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, thoughts about it. I think that Fast and Furious was robbed. Fast and Furious 7 and The Fate of the Furious, Fast and Furious 8. Charlize Theron, she won an Oscar for Monster. And also she was in this Clay movie known as Mad Max Fury Road. I mean, come on. So I feel like obviously obvious snub here deserves an Oscar of her own for sure.
Well, I mean, you just want to see Fast and Furious win some awards.
Obviously. I think it's the greatest movie of all time. I honestly think so.
I've never seen a Fast and Furious movie.
You're not missing anything.
What do you think, Eve?
Well, I think this year is very... I just think that a lot of people who aren't really interested in film, like you see news stories on the movies that have been nominated for Best Picture on like CNN, but it's not like in the film section, it's in like the news section, because the films this year, a lot of them are very topical. And when I say topical,
that's interesting.
Yeah, they're interesting. Like Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, is a lot of people are talking about that one, sometimes for not the greatest reasons, because it... Well, do you want to start talking about Three Billboards? Because
Patty hasn't really gone. Patrick hasn't actually like told us like what he thinks about the original like I guess nominations and like the movie, the picks from this year at the pool, right?
Okay, well, yeah. Let's start, but I will name the 9 movies that are nominated for Best Picture, and I think the way my diction is going to indicate what I feel about these movies, because I can't hold it back.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so Call Me by Your Name.
Ooh. Call Me by Your Name.
I'm saying it like that because I love it. Okay. Is nominated. So Call Me By Your Name, Darkest Hour, Dunkirk, Get Out, Lady Bird, Phantom Thread, The Post, The Shape of Water, and the aforementioned Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
What, do we have to say the entire name all the time?
I think we'll just call it Three Billboards.
Okay, cool.
From now on.
Let's go with that.
Can we just call it like Three or something? Or like
just Billboards.
Or just like the Sam Rockwell movie?
Billboards is good.
Just call it Billboards.
Okay, cool. Awesome. So what do you think of those? What are the ones that you hate in particular? Because I didn't have that from your
let's
voice.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah. Which are
so
the...
I have like there's some films that I'm totally apathetic about, and those would be Darkest Hour and The Post. Like, I've seen 7 of the 9 nominees. Those are the 2 I haven't seen, and I just don't want to see them because they just have nothing original to offer, and from what I've heard, they're just exactly what you think they're going to be. They're just historical retellings, and they're fine, and I don't really have any interest in seeing fine movies. I would rather see a movie I really don't like, but that is interesting, like Transition, Three Billboards, or Billboards. Billboards, I went into really excited because I think it won the audience prize.
Yeah, everybody's raving about it. Like
Toronto International Film Festival. And I like Frances McDormand, and it's a dark comedy. And I know it had some, it just had, I hate this word, but I'm going to use it, a strong female lead. It's dumb.
I'm like rolling my eyes.
Rolling your eyes.
Yeah. Sorry, I just think you should have female leads. I don't think you should be like, is it only
she's
strong
great,
women that are like, qualified to be in movies. I don't know. Just making sense.
Yeah. Either way, yeah. I was really interested to see it. And I remember seeing it and just being really... I felt like I was being thrown around while seeing it because it took so many turns that I didn't expect. And it was quite exciting at moments. But then at other moments, I was like, this is so wrong. That would be the fact that her domestic abuse is used as a comedic element in the film. You're making a face because you haven't seen the movie yet.
No, I haven't seen the movie yet. So that's like a strong no.
Yeah, so she's the main character is a domestic abuse victim. And it is referenced, and we meet her husband.
You just spoiled the movie.
That is not a spoiler. And okay. We meet her husband, who is now in a relationship with a 19-year-old. So Frances McDormand's character is a domestic abuse victim. And we see her abuse referenced, but it's only, we see the reference and then it's immediately turns into a joke. And I remember watching that and just being extremely uncomfortable and thinking this is such an interesting thing to go into because her character is filled with so much rage and anger over the death of her daughter. That's not a spoiler. And it's just being used in a comedic way. And then there's the use of black characters in the film. Because one of the characters, the Sam Rockwell character, is a character who, as a police officer, has a history of probably abusing black prison victims. And the black characters are really much just there to be just, like, kind of seen and not heard. They I don't, know any of their... You'd barely find out their names. One of them just appears to be, the... How can I say this? It's kind of a character trope called, basically a magical black person, kind of a person who
a wise person just
appears. Yeah, just, exceptionally wise and flawless, and it's just okay, you're just a plot device.
Basically, just props.
After watching this movie, you become extremely aware that it was written by a non-American white man.
I think it's an Irish guy.
Yeah, he's not even American, and he's... a man, and he's white, and I was frustrated because it's such a good idea for a movie, and it's so interesting and a great concept, and I just thought it was really poorly done.
Yeah, I think a lot of criticism was I think it tried to bite off more than it could swallow.
That's
and it
totally...
was just if in another time, when not such a polarizing time, it might have just gone under the radar. If it came out 2007 or something. Everybody'd be it's okay. But now everybody's just really angry at everything. So everybody just jumped on how bad it was.
And I think if the film had just been about Frances McDormand's character and you had not had the Sam Rockwell or the Woody Harrelson character, it would have been way better and way more interesting and way... it would have a wider consensus as being a great film. And that is why I think it will not win Best Picture, because I think it has too much controversy surrounding it, and there's also the fact that Martin McDonagh is not nominated for Best Director.
Yes, that's a reason for that.
That's a great reason. Although I do think Frances McDormand will win Best Actress and Sam Rockwell will win Best Supporting Actor.
Okay.
And that's billboards.
I think I'm going to pivot a little bit to talk about maybe Dunkirk or something, because I know Patrick has seen Dunkirk.
Let's talk
about
it.
What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I don't know about it for Best Picture. I could definitely see it winning for cinematography. It was just beautifully,
what was it nominated for?
Shot.
A
bunch of stuff,
Dunkirk,
right?
Dunkirk was nominated for 8 Oscars.
Ooh,
I'm
nice.
I'm going to scroll. So, Best Picture.
Best Director.
Yes, Best Director. It didn't win getting any Oscar nominations, which makes sense because there's not really a lead.
And there's not that much dialogue either, which
Best
I think...
Best Cinematography. Best Editing. I could see it winning that.
Yeah.
Sound Editing.
Yeah,
sound mixing.
The thing is, I think, and I always say this about Christopher Nolan, just looking at least my favorite movies, Inception and Dark Knight and what other movies? but the thing about those movies are they're very, very much set piece driven and everything, and they're very much just the feats that he does with like all the cameras and the lighting and the sound and like just making it very, very epic, and like the way he like makes feeling happen with sound and stuff. All that stuff is always great, right? But then like you come out leaving feeling like all the characters are just like empty. There's like this like all the characters, like we, like you have great characters in this movie, and like the only shine if they're like stellar actors, right? So like Christian Bale is like a, like, you know, like award winning actor, right? But like in the Dark Knight series, he's like, his character doesn't really pop out that much. Like the only person
he's
pops out
literally
is, like,
the Dark Knight.
It's like it's only Heath Ledger, right? Like it's like literally like the only people that pop out. Like everybody else is just like a, well, they're there to just like fulfill the role of saying a cool line somewhere here or there, but like they're not really like, like they're,
well,
not,
they're just driving the action, right? There's not a lot of character development.
Exactly, there's no character development. So like in this movie in particular, like what's his face, Tom Hardy is literally like, I mean, he's a pilot, and he like, but the entire movie, the only emotion you see from him is just his eyebrows just like moving up, and he's just like or like, huh. And it's like very much like there's no like, and like I think there's like a bunch of like Kenneth Branagh scenes which are amazing, but like very few people shine in the movie because it's just like, oh, this is happening, and like the clock is ticking. They have this like very cool like sound effect where it's like a clock is ticking all the time. There's water everywhere.
It is nominated for best original score, which
exactly,
I think it probably will
exactly
win.
So like I think that like I definitely respect Christopher Nolan a lot because like just like generally like track record for sure, and like the people that he gets for like music and all that stuff are like very, very good, but like I don't know about best director or any of that stuff. Yeah, or even like, yeah, yeah.
I think best director is a lock for Guillermo del Toro.
Okay,
so with that, shall we transition into Shape of Water?
Yes,
let's talk about Shape of Water.
I didn't have a lot of opinions about
Shape
of Water.
Very similar.
this is just Evo Day's
just
film
hot,
hour
hot,
just
takes on
hot takes on all the films.
Eve rants for 30 minutes or longer. Yeah, so a lot of the problems I had with Billboards are the same problems I had with Shape of Water.
Yeah.
What you said,
yeah,
it's trying to bite off more than it can chew.
Yeah.
It absolutely did that. It was because it had this really, really cool central idea of a love story between a...
Sorry. Keep going.
Of basically reimagining and dramatizing Avatar.
Yes, but if like...
That's a cheap shot.
That's a cheap shot.
Beauty and the Beast.
Yes, but if like the Beast was like psychic and like
I had
also
powers.
A fish.
Had magical powers.
Yeah. I think the character is actually based on like a Hellboy character, right?
Or
like
it's based on the creature from the Black Lagoon.
Exactly. There you go. So like, I don't know. Like, but I'm saying that character reminds me very much of like, because he directed Hellboy.
Yeah.
So like, and that character reminds me of a character that was in Hellboy.
Well, I know the actor Doug Jones, who plays the fish monster, is in Hellboy.
That's what I'm saying. So like, I thought it was like a spinoff off of Hellboy.
Well, it's in all the original categories, so I don't think it's directly. I mean, I'm sure he draws inspiration from himself.
Anyways, keep
going. And I think I totally understand why he should be praised, because it is it's a beautiful film, and the makeup, or I don't even think it is makeup, the prosthetics basically that he wears are just really stunning, and it's really interesting to watch this fish man. But then it was like a really interesting sci-fi, but also a romance, but also a Cold War movie, but also a gay thing, also very, let me put it this way. If you know that what happens in this movie that's extremely controversial, that is Sally Hawkins does unsavory things with the fish man, I watched this movie sitting next to my 93-year-old grandmother. I was extremely uncomfortable. It was horrible. My whole family was with me, and it took us a while to finally bring up the courage to talk about the fact that Sally Hawkins was naked for a lot of this movie. Unexpectedly. I was not planning on that. So, yeah, it's just it stuffs a lot of genres into one film, and it's weird, but it didn't focus on, when I first saw Fishman, I was like, that's so beautiful and interesting. Let's just look at that for the whole movie. And he's barely in it. Like, we focus way more on Michael Shannon's mustache-twisting villain character.
I love Michael Shannon.
Oh, sure. Like, but in this movie, he's just evil, which is really boring.
I think some of the stuff you're getting at with it is kind of typical for Del Toro, though. Even, like, Pan's Labyrinth, he's got the kind of, like, fantasy angle with, you know, various creatures. Then he's also got sort of a coming-of-age story going on, and it's also a little bit of a period piece, and that's, I don't know, I just see it a lot from Del Toro, that kind of, it's a little unfocused almost.
Yeah, I've seen Pan's Labyrinth and I really liked it. I guess I'm kind of eating my own words here, but it just felt felt unfinished. It felt like it needed to spend a couple more days in the editing room, and some parts of it just needed to be cut out. Sally Hawkins very much deserves her nomination, though, for Best Actress. I thought she was really beautiful.
I think most of the actors like that are nominated, except Gary Oldman, because Gary Oldman isn't... I think all the actors, the actor categories are, pretty solid.
Like, for who's going to win, or...
For who's going to win, and also who got nominated. They seem, fine. Some people got snubbed, but,
I think that's very interesting, because I think there's... Yeah. I have more than one actor who I think was very much put in their category just because they needed someone to fill it.
Well, yes, but, what I mean is, it's not like they acted badly or something.
Yeah, but I mean, Octavia Spencer and Woody Harrelson's, and that's in Billboards, their characters were kind of useless. Or didn't really do much, nothing that really pushed their limits, especially in the supporting category. Supporting category is really where people push themselves,
and you need to stand out.
And I didn't think either of them did. But I guess that's just my opinion.
Fair enough.
And shall we move on to the next?
Do you want to talk about Lady Bird?
Oh, I would love to talk about
Lady Bird. Yeah, Lady Bird is easily my, I wanted to win everything.
That's nice.
I thought it was a very quaint movie.
Quaint,
but also quiet. It was a quietly movie. I'll say that. It was the kind of movie where from the very first scene, you were I like this family, but I also see the conflict as well. But it's also I know that they love each other so much. And it sets the tone for the entire movie. And you see that same push and pull. I said this on another podcast before. Don't quote me. But literally nobody in this movie means ill. It's one of those movies where the villains are not just these mustache twirling, as you said, mustache twirling evil bad guys. They're very much just I want to do what's right, but they make mistakes or they mess up or something. It was that kind of weird Kyle. Except Kyle, we hate Kyle. But Kyle.
I love Kyle just because he's Timothy Chalamet.
But that's my point. My point is I Kyle didn't do anything.
He's just stupid.
Wrong. That's my point.
He's just a dumb teenager.
Exactly. But he wasn't I want to deliberately hurt someone. Right. It was that kind of thing that I really liked, and I really liked just all the female relationships, the relationships between all the women. It was just with Lady Bird and her mom, and her best friend, and with the nun, and it was just very perfect.
As someone who this film was directly targeted to, I was directly targeted in this movie. You know what? Sometimes I think I might be. but no, I mean. I definitely related to the main character a lot with wanting to, succeed, but also wanting to be different. But also, she's old. The character is younger than me, but she would have grown up, 10 years. She would have been that age 10 years before me or somewhat. And the relationship with her mom, to me, was really, and her parents, was very reflective of what I think mine kind of is. I'm saying that in the nicest way possible, is that you love your parents more than anything, but you just have arguments with them, and from an outside perspective, watching the arguments that she has with her mom, you're oh my god, this is so easy to resolve. But when you're in that moment,
you just want to
it's the most important thing in the world. And I thought Laurie Metcalf's performance, she was amazing.
Holy crap. I've listened to all the the interviews with Laurie Metcalf and Greta Gerwig and Saoirse Ronan.
Saoirse Ronan. I love her.
it's pretty everybody involved with that, from even the dad,
he was so good.
Exactly. Just that tiny.
Why was he ignored?
I think one of the other things I also mention a lot is that each one of those I like the fact that it was a little tease of everybody. And then it just go away. And even, it's I want to see that world. I want to go there.
Yeah, even her brother, who I think we can all understand is adopted.
Exactly.
It's never said.
Exactly.
Because they would never talk about that.
Exactly. And it was each of these people could be their own movie.
Exactly.
That's one of the things I really loved. And it was the dad's story, the priest. I think the mom talked to the priest or something. At the beginning of the movie when the mom, she's a nurse, right? She gives a gift to some guy or something. You're what does that mean? I have no idea what any of this means.
This movie was very much about how it feels to be a teenage girl, in that you think everything that's happening to you is the most important thing ever. But at the same time, it shows literally everyone else is going through the exact same thing. It doesn't matter how old they are. It doesn't matter if they're a man or a woman. So I thought it did that beautifully by showing Lady Bird being, like, focusing so much on her own life and being selfish. Like, she's a selfish character, but that's not, doesn't make her a bad person. But still showing everyone else in her life is going through something, too. And when you're struggling with something, no matter, everyone else in your life is struggling with something. Patrick, any thoughts? Have you seen Lady Bird?
No, I haven't seen Lady Bird, actually. I'm not too surprised, though, with what I'm hearing about it, that Greta Gerwig did it, though, because I know that she did a lot of stuff with Noah Baumbach, and it sounds like it's kind of in that...
Noah Baumbach did the one with Ben Stiller and Adam Driver, right? Like, he did the, like, not explosive or anything, just, like, very, like, oh, like, everybody... Like, not mumblecore, like a few steps away from mumblecore, but, like... Or maybe I'll just see mumblecore. I'll just see mumblecore. Yeah, that's
easiest way to put it.
Well, I'm very proud of Greta Gerwig for getting that Oscar nomination because so few women have gotten a nomination. I mean, I don't think she's going to win, but I think she should be extremely proud of herself, and I'm so excited to see what her next project is. And with that, I think we can transition to another first-time director nominee.
Your boy Jordan Peele. Awesome.
Who directed my favorite movie of the year.
Okay.
Get Out.
Get Out is very good.
It's like, so good.
Yeah, like,
Like, I understand why we have war movies and biopics and stuff that where we basically know the ending to it. But to me, a film has a totally original idea. It has to be at least somewhat good. Like, this idea that he created, this totally original screenplay is so, like, it's so original.
Exactly.
And it's so, like, topical without, like, feeling like you're being hit over the head with anything. Yeah. And it's, for me, it deserves everything.
I feel that it's one of the reasons why I'm always very drawn to, like, the original screenplay, like, category, because it's always, like, oh, like, which movie, like, surprised me, but, like, out of all the, like, screenplays, which of the screenplays was, like, jumped out at me the most.
It's actually something fresh, right?
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's
like totally.
You do get stuff that's been done before.
All the time. Like, everybody's like trying to use the exact same like tricks to like, you know, get the Oscar voters, right? So like, because the Oscar voters, you know exactly what they want, right? You know, they want like certain tweaks, right, that are like exactly for them, right? But like, not everybody follows that. Like, Moonlight did that.
Oh, love Moonlight.
Like, Moonlight is great, and like Moonlight.
I don't want to get stuck on that. Yeah, I don't want to get it for hours.
But like, every movie that like I've jumped onto in the last few years has always done that like surprise me thing, and like even in every single movie, like if you have a movie that surprises people, you have a better chance of winning them over than like if you just go for like your dull like movie.
That's a crowd just a biopic is a crowd pleaser, but you're gonna talk about it for decades later if it's original.
Exactly.
And while I love the original idea of Shape of Water and Three Billboards, the uncleanliness and I'm not slamming this. This is a genuine criticism. The just roughness and kind of jaggedness of the screenplays is really what bothered me about it. Whereas Get Out, not only was it an original, it was the tone was totally consistent the entire time, and the acting was great. It was suspenseful without it being like, look, I'm going to give you like 10 jump scares in a row just so you are scared the whole time. Like, it wasn't really that scary. It wasn't scary.
It was like, more like a chill. Like
it was very chilling.
Like a sustained, like, this is
a
very
little
creepy.
Bit of suspense.
I don't like to talk. I never talk in theaters, but I did see this one by myself, and
Don't go there.
Oh, yeah, I definitely said, don't go in there, because it was so, like, something was messed up.
Patty, do you have any? I keep calling Patty on air.
That's his name.
I know.
But like, his name. He's wearing green.
I know.
And he's kind of a redhead.
That's offensive.
I'm half Irish.
Okay, I guess that makes it okay. Here's the thing. What was your favorite movie of the year? Like, it doesn't even have to be like an Oscar movie.
Could be the Emoji Movie.
It's been a long year.
I think Get Out benefited a lot from like coming out early. I think that like
that's very
rare.
I think if you're in the middle,
sometimes that's double edged though, because if it comes out right at the end, everyone remembers it.
True. No, so I think like beginning and ending, like so, Three Billboards came out like very very late. Like Three Billboards and The Post and all those movies, they came out very very late. So like it was like very very fresh in people's minds.
That's also another like typical tweaking it to the Oscars kind of tactic.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah, we'll drop it like two months before nominations, and they'll love it.
Yeah. Exactly. So, wait, you didn't actually give him
yeah, you haven't answered.
Yeah, I know. I totally dodged that.
You should answer the question.
Out of the stuff that's nominated, I would say, well, just because it's, I haven't seen all of them, probably Dunkirk. I've been meaning to go see Call Me By Your Name because I've heard a lot of good things.
Can we transition to that?
Yeah, that's
okay.
That's
my other favorite movie of the year was Call Me By Your Name.
Why is it your favorite movie?
Oh, let's talk about it. Because acting, flawless. Cinematography, perfect. The screenplay was beautiful. The overall just tone of the film, like it was consistently beautiful the whole time. And it was, and people have been talking about it as a revolutionary film in the queer community because the two characters have a same-sex relationship in the 80s and are not punished in any way. There's no... no one finds out and, like, shuns them. The parents don't reject them. No one dies. Italy, 1982 or 3. Elio is a prodigy of every kind. He's smart. He's beautiful. He's played by Timothée Chalamet.
He plays the piano.
He plays the piano.
Like, very, very, like, rock star.
And the guitar.
Yeah.
And probably something else. And his father is an archaeologist, played by Michael Stuhlbarg, who was also snubbed for Best Supporting Actor. And he has students come every year, and in this pivotal year of Elio's life, when he's 17, it's in the summer, Armie Hammer comes to visit, playing the character.
Dreamy.
Oh, God, so dreamy. I think he's 6 foot five.
He's very, very tall.
He's so tall.
Like, it's actually freakishly tall.
Anyway, and basically, Oliver is, yeah, he's just a beautiful person, and he's smart, and Elio being a, 17-year-old, he's discovering himself in a lot of ways, and they have a connection that eventually turns into a romantic relationship. And yeah, but it's
did you
just
spoil the movie?
Yeah, sorry if you didn't know. No, it's a gay thing.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert: they're gay.
Yeah, no, it's a very like it's like I wouldn't say sustained, but it's like one of those things where like you know like most romantic movies where they just like. It's like one or two scenes and then you're like in love or something.
No,
right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
But in this movie, it's like very much like, oh, like I notice you, you know, like very much like talk a little bit, you know, like enjoy each other's presence. Like it's like very much like a
yeah, they
slow
get to
burn.
Know each other.
Yeah, it's a
and
slow burn. That's
there's
a, that's
also the knowledge that because he's visiting, they're not going to be there together. So yeah. It's not like, oh, I've fallen in love with you and we're going to get married.
Yeah.
It's not like that. Like they're just, I love you right now. Let's enjoy this while we can, basically.
Cool.
Okay. Best Picture. I want Get Out to win, and I think it could. I think it could surprise everyone by winning.
But what's like? So Get Out is probably a dark horse, though, in that category.
Okay, so
right?
What
so
I think?
Like, what's the movie that you think is definitely going to win?
Shape of Water.
Okay, cool. What's next?
Best Actor.
Okay.
I think Gary Oldman's going to win.
But who do you want to win?
Timothée Chalamet.
Say it with your chest.
Best Actress.
Okay.
Frances McDormand. Is going to win. And I think she should. I don't think that's a mistake.
Cool.
I'm being so authoritative.
Cool. No, go for it. No, like you're running this podcast, honestly.
I'm a second-year film studies student. supporting actor, Sam Rockwell is probably going to win. And he was good. I have problems with his character, but not the acting.
This is, like, completely personal. I really want to see Willem Dafoe take that just because I like him.
Oh, yeah, he's
and
great.
Also Florida
Shout
Project.
No,
that doesn't have anything to do with it.
Sorry.
I just found out recently that my dad really likes Willem Dafoe, so he probably wants him to win, too, even though he didn't see the Florida Project.
Willem Dafoe is a very good
That is, it's yeah. a little bit, like, of a career Oscar like we were talking about before we got started, where I right. think, like, it is just for...
Okay.
He's also many, like, other, like, supporting actor roles. Like, yeah,
he's a character
probably.
Actor.
Yeah,
okay,
exactly.
Next. Supporting actress, Allison Janney is probably going to win for
yes.
I, Tonya,
yeah.
which is fine. I'm okay with that. I just think that the Laurie Metcalf, they're very, those characters are very interesting to compare because they are both mothers that
yeah.
have interesting relationships with their daughters,
yeah.
whereas, but, you know, the Laurie Metcalf is nuanced and interesting and realistic, whereas the I, Tonya character is literally just abusive and evil.
Yeah, I think like, Laurie Metcalf is... that's the reason why I wanted Laurie Metcalf to win that because like I do think that she does not a better job, but I think that she's like a.
It's subtle. Best director, who I think Guillermo del Toro will win, and it will be not because he's undeserving. I love Pan's Labyrinth, but I do think it'll be a career Oscar, which is you know pretty normal. Who should win? Jordan Peele, maybe. I'm okay with Guillermo del Toro winning.
Yeah, I'm actually okay with any of them. Like this is like
except for Paul Thomas Anderson. Well, not for this movie.
Not for this movie. No, that's what I'm saying. But like, what I'm saying is like they're all good directors. So it's like if any of them won, like it wouldn't be like, burn this place down. You know, like, do you feel what I'm saying?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Okay. Adapted screenplay. I do think Call Me By Your Name is going to win, and I think it should win. If I haven't made that clear already, this one I'm not sure. I'm genuinely not sure what will win.
Interesting.
A film very rarely wins Best Picture and not Best Screenplay. Like even Spotlight 2 years ago won Best Picture and Best Adapted Screenplay, and that's it. Moonlight won Best Picture, Best Original Screenplay, and Best Supporting Actor, and that's it.
That's it, yeah.
So they kind of go hand in hand.
It's like you're trying to shock us by like overwhelming us with like the other nominations and like the like early on in the ceremony, they like show like, oh, like, you know, this movie is winning everything. So everybody's like, oh my god, La La Land is winning everything, you know? But like it was just no, Moonlight only won like three things, but like they won the three things that like kind of mattered, you know? Like, I don't know if that makes sense.
Well, like the three really big ones kind of were like three of the biggest ones.
Exactly.
Yeah. There's a kind of a idea of the big five, and that's best actor, best actress, best director, best screenplay, and best picture. And only three films have ever won that. It Happened One Night, which came out in 1934 or 5. I don't think anyone's going to fact check, so it's okay if I get that wrong. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and Silence of the Lambs.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Silence of the Lambs.
That's a great movie.
It's a great movie.
That's a rare instance where Well, first of all, it's like the. I mean, I don't really consider it a horror film, but if you do, it's the only horror film that's ever won Best Picture.
It's a thriller,
and it also I think came out in February, like Get Out.
There you go.
That would be an instance where a film makes came sense. Out early in the year and then spent the whole year being popular, like Get
makes
Out.
Sense.
Yeah. I still have my fingers crossed for that movie.
Okay, thank you for listening to Cult from the UBC. We're the podcast from UBC's campus newspaper. What you just listened to was our panel kind of talking about like the Oscars, and the Oscars are happening on March 4th, this Sunday. Listen to this and then watch that. It's going to be awesome. Bye.
That was myself, Olamide Olanion, Evo Day, and Patrick Gillen. We previewed this year's Oscar nominations and kind of the movies they're rooting for. Films.
And the films that we're very much not rooting for.
Yes, thrill awards. All right.
Coming up, we're going to have more cool interviews. Next, we have our interview with Jin Lee, and we talked about the UBC Film Society. After that, we have our interview with Angela O'Donnell about UBC's mysterious Ponderosa cake. We'll be right back after these PSAs.
CITR and Discorder are hiring a new station manager. Just asking for a friend, but if I know someone who would be great for this position, how would they apply? Well, you can email Eleanor at volunteer@CITR.ca or Hala at president@CITR.ca if you have any questions, and the full job description is on the CITR and Discorder website. If your friend thinks they can handle all this, then they should send a resume and cover letter to Hala Bertrand at president@CITR.ca by Friday, March 3rd.
Hold of some pigskin. This is my shimmering life prize. All I must do is create a diversion. What could distract people who love sports? Sports. 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 Sports.
Do you find sports distracting? Feel the need to chant sports for hours on end? Then come on by the CITR station at the new sub to get involved. We do play-by-play, color commentary, audio production, interviews, and so much more. Only on CITR 101.9 FM.
Tired of the gender binary, gender policing, or just want to speak your truth?
Join CITR's Gender Empowerment Collective.
This group of radio makers is all about centering the voices, issues, concerns, and experiences of women-identified, transgender, intersex, two-spirit, genderqueer, gender non-conforming, non-binary, and gender-fluid folks and allies.
Anyone can join, no experience necessary.
Like the Gender Empowerment Collective on Facebook or email volunteer@CITR.ca.
Our show, Intersections, airs Thursdays from 4 to 5 and features music, interviews, events, news, commentary, basically anything we care to talk about.
See you then.
You're listening to Cult at the UBC, a culture show from the campus newspaper at the University of British Columbia. We're broadcasting from the unceded Musqueam territories on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm Evo Day.
And I'm Alamdi Olanion.
Coming up, we have my interview with Jin Lee.
for the UBC Film Society. Hope you enjoy it.
Today we're talking about the UBC Film Society and its upcoming productions. With us is Jin Lee, a second-year media studies major. Hi, Jin.
Hi. How's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
I'm good.
So, to start off, what is your position in the UBC Film Society?
I am the productions manager at the UBC Film Society.
And how did you first get involved with that?
I got involved last year in my first year, so I know I really wanted to join a film type of club on campus, and I really wanted to hone my skills and stuff. So I got involved in the productions area, so I went to all the workshops in first semester, then we did the actual productions in second semester, and I was the editor on one of the films.
Very cool.
Yeah.
How did you first get interested in film, just in general?
In general, okay. It goes all the way back to middle school, I guess, was when I first started taking it pretty seriously. My brother watches a lot of films, and so I got interested because he always had the remote. So he always had the remote, and then I just slowly got interested, and I started watching different films on my own time, and just watching random things that were just showing already. I never went out of my way to find anything.
Can you think of one specific film that really got you interested in the history of film or producing films?
Well, producing films, I know I really liked watching them, really got into watching them, like I said, around middle school. But producing, that started in high school because then we got all these video assignments that we were required to do. So I ended up taking on a lot of the different roles, director, editor, screenwriter, just at various points in time. And I got really, really into it. So that's when I came to UBC, I knew I wanted to do productions.
Okay, so what exactly does the UBC Film Society do day-to-day?
Day-to-day? Day-to-day, every week we have screenings on Thursday, and we show two different films, and we usually try to center it around a specific theme. So just last month, when it was February, it was Black History Awareness Month, and so we had different films every week, kind of tried to make it very relevant and surround that sort of theme, and we do that every week. So that's one of the things we do. Then the second thing is we also have beer gardens, and those happen every month. And it's essentially just another film screening, but with beer. And we also have trivia nights. Those are still happening, folks. And those also happen every month. So that's the chunk of stuff that we do, the screenings. Then the second part is productions, which I handle. And for that, we, in first semester, we had all our workshops, so that covers the entire filmmaking process, pre-production, production, post-production, and then second semester, we actually produce two short films, which get screened at the end of the semester. So look out for that.
So how can UBC students get involved in the Film Society?
Well, you can get involved as a volunteer, and so you can show up to our screenings and help out with setting up and other things. For the most part, getting involved would be getting involved with production. So I guess the screening part, you get involved by showing up and watching films. But for productions, we're currently looking for people right now for our productions, so you can get in touch with us and we will direct you to the right people. So we have two directors right now, Chloe Warren and Abdo, and they're super cool. They have short films that they're working on really hard right now, and it's very exciting. So you can sign up. There's no experience required. You literally can just show up and be a production assistant, and that's perfectly fine. You can help out, learn new skills. You can learn how to operate the lights, and or if you want to learn how to operate the boom, different things depending on your interests and what you want to learn. So, yeah.
So why do you think that having a film society is important on a university campus?
It's important, well, film as an art medium is important. It's it's very different from, you know, other art forms in that it's showing people and real events and or if I mean if it's a narrative then showing live action happening. I think it's still pretty new compared to all the other art mediums, compared to painting or even photography. It's really developed, and I think with film it captures something a bit more magical than the other ones, in the sense that time can really be warped and it can feel really long or it can feel really short, and being able to sort of manipulate that. I think having that in art is super important, and it's very different. And I think anyone who has seen a film can attest to that. And so I think having a film society, you know, people who are very interested in film but may not be majoring in film production or film studies, I think having that as like a go-to place for people who are just interested as like a hobby and to really, really develop that passion that they have without fully committing to it is super important.
Okay, and to get personal, but not too personal, what is your favorite movie, if you had to pick one? I know that's a really hard choice to make for film buffs. You can name three if you want, some of your favorite films.
Some of my favorite films. Yeah, no, that is really hard. I'll name a couple. I really, really... This is one of the earlier ones I saw when I was mentioning like the ones I started seeing on my own time. The first one that got me interested in like old golden era Hollywood phase was Dead Ringer with Betty Davis. It was one of the first sort of black and white films from that era that I saw, and I got really interested in it. And that genre, and also just really ignited my passion for film in general. So that one was really good. I thought the acting was stellar, and having, I'm not sure in the historical facts of this, but, you know, the whole having, because Betty Davis has a twin in it, just to give you some context, but, you know, using that effect was super cool. I really like that one a lot. Second one, I'm just thinking back to like the most recent one I saw. This other one called France. It's a German-French film. I saw it on a plane like a month ago, and it was really, really good. It was also in black and white, intentionally, and it had, I don't know, it's just what, okay, in terms of like art housey sort of films, that was one of them, and I think everyone should have one, just one of those like really like moving films, and it's very slow, like the plot is very minimal, no dialogue almost, but it was really powerful. And then third one that I really, really like, I'm gonna throw a rom-com in there, because why not? There's this one with Sandra Bullock. It's called While You Were Sleeping. And
I haven't seen any of these.
And it's not, I mean, in terms of like film production, it's really not the best. But I don't know. This was also one of the ones that I saw when I was younger. And it was just, I don't know. In terms of me personally, this is like what it made me feel at the time. Like I loved it. It was funny. It was like one of those like meet cute stories. And in terms of rom-com, it was probably the least cheesy movie in that genre. So yeah, check it out.
And is there a filmmaker that you specifically greatly admire and maybe find inspiration when you're, you know, maybe making up a film in your head and you take inspiration from a specific filmmaker?
Yes, but in general, I would have to say like I'm more in the editing side.
Okay.
So I've never been like directing. I've done it like in high school, but not. I've never been much of a director. Mostly editing. But I guess if I were to look up to anybody in that sense, maybe Wong Kar-wai. He has really. I love the look of his films. I love the way that he portrays Hong Kong. the colors, the cinematography, everything, the stop motion that he uses.
In the Mood for Love is a beautiful film.
Yeah. So maybe him, but I don't know. I've never been much on that side, but I guess I would say him.
Okay. Last question. Mm-hmm. What film do you want, not think, but want to win Best Picture at this coming Oscars on Sunday?
At this coming Oscars, I like some of the films for, like, you know, the narrative and the story, and then some of them I just like the look of them. I don't know. Oh, God. I really... Okay. I would say... I wouldn't say this is, like, my favorite film. I just need to, like, preface this before I get all the, like, oh. I would say Shape of Water.
Interesting.
I know it's... I just love the look of it. Like, it was... I love the fantasy. I love the, like, magical elements of it. I wouldn't say it's, like, the best film, for sure. Like, but I don't know. Yeah, I just really like it. I love the look of it, and I feel like it's fresh. It's very different, as anyone who's seen it would maybe say. The storyline's a bit interesting. But yeah, I guess off the top of my head, just, like, without giving it too much thought right now, because if I do, this would take a while, I would say The Shape of Water, yeah.
And do you have any further comments or anything you would like to let the listeners know?
Yes. Okay. If you want to get involved, there is another way in terms of screenings. So we will be having a student short film screening soon. Look out for that. So if you have any productions, any movies that you've shot in the past, 2 years, send it to us or reach out to us on Facebook. We also have our emails listed there, and send it our way. We will be screening them, and it's a way to showcase your work in a very chill environment, no pressure. So look out for that.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for doing this interview, and good luck on your future endeavors in the world of filmmaking.
Thank you. I thank you for this interview. I enjoyed it.
That was Evo Day interviewing Jin Lee of the UBC Film Society. We'll be right back, but first some PSAs.
I think the news midweek, when midweek news broke that Teo Dezar wasn't going to be playing in this game.
It's a growing sport, and to do it on a university campus with an educational message behind it.
They'll be facing off against all the big teams from all the other conferences and the nationals.
Want to be a CITR sports broadcaster? Looking for a cool way to get involved in UBC sports? Then email sports101@citr.ca or come by our station in the Nest to find out more. See you soon.
Do you want to go to a party with me?
No, the game's on.
Oh, I almost forgot. I'll be right there.
We like sports and we don't care who knows. From shooting hoops to the Super Bowl.
Do you like sports and don't care who knows? Then CITR Sports needs you. If you like sports, are into radio, or generally just want to have a great time, then come join us. Email our sports coordinator at sports101@citr.ca to find out more. Or come by the station in the new sub. See you soon.
Watch, because I'm the man.
LGBTQ2I Night is a positive space for folks to learn about bike maintenance in a relaxed environment led by queer mechanics and volunteers. It takes place on the fourth Wednesday of every month at the Bike Kitchen on UBC's campus. Bring your own bike and fix them with our tools, come with questions and ask away, or learn by watching other folks work on their bikes. Beginners are always welcome. This event is entirely free to attend, and there will be free pizza. For more information, visit bikecoop.ca.
You're listening to Cult at the UBC, a culture show from the campus newspaper at the University of British Columbia. We are broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Musqueam people on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm Alamdi Alanyon.
And I'm Eve O'Day.
Up next, I interviewed Angela O'Donnell. For some reason, I just like lost faculty of speaking.
It's a hard name.
A writer at the UBC. Her investigation into the UBC Ponderosa cake. It's a mysterious and elusive. It's a confectionery delight. Her findings may shock you.
They shocked me.
All right. Hope you enjoy it.
Hey, everyone. Today, we are going to do a deep dive on UBC's darkest confectionery creation, the Ponderosa cake. I'm here with Angela O'Donnell, a staff writer for the UBC who wrote about the history of the treat. It was a really big, sprawling culture piece. Very interesting. Welcome to the show, Angela.
Thank you. I'm very excited.
Cool. Thank you. So tell us, what is the Ponderosa cake?
Well, UBC Food Services would call it a chocolate chip banana bread loaf.
That sounds delicious.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. So why the story? Why did you kind of focus on this story?
I focused on this story because first of all, I really like eating Ponderosa cake. So the number one thing was I picked something that I liked to eat. So then I was like, hopefully this will also be interesting for other people. But I have probably a more strong connection than other people with Ponderosa cake because I ate it when I was a kid. And my parents would talk about it in their university experiences. So to me, it's an important part of what I think of when I think of the University of British Columbia.
Interesting. So there's a bunch of investigative moves that you make in the story. Could you kind of just walk us through the story from the moment that you stumbled upon this particular iteration of the story? Because you mentioned before off air, 12 mm-hmm. years old, eating the Ponderosa cake, mm-hmm. Going on Reddit or Instagram or some kind of website that has some history of it. And you kind of had all this exposure, but where does this story start in your article?
The story starts in my article. I pitch the piece and everyone in the meeting sort of knows what I'm talking about when I say Ponderosa cake, but no one really has a solid idea of it. So I start doing research and I start doing research in the way that everyone starts researching, where I just Google it. And I'm like, maybe this will be enough. So I start by Googling it and I find recipes on Vancouver School Board has a recipe and a bunch of cookbooks have recipes.
And for the Ponderosa cake?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, and it started from UBC, right?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
And then there's a bunch of foodie, quirky blogs where it's talking about when I was an undergraduate at UBC, I loved eating this cake and now I'm going to try and make it. But then I couldn't actually find anything about the history of Ponderosa cake or pretty much anything past an actual just recipe.
Yeah.
So then I was I have to work harder now. So then I did a search through the I'm so nervous to say the newspaper's name out loud, the UBC's.
Honestly, I don't think anybody knows how to pronounce it. The UBC's archives. Yeah.
So I went through the archives and I started with the paper archives. And that is so incredibly tedious because it's just 100 years of stacks of paper. Yeah. So then I moved on to doing more of a discourse analysis style thing on the open archives.
Okay.
For the University of British Columbia on the newspaper, the UBC.
So what did you find?
I found nothing.
Okay, cool. So there's you just keep searching and there's nothing to find.
Yeah.
Okay.
I shouldn't say nothing, or it's tiny mentions.
Mm, one sentence.
Yeah, or less than a sentence. One of the things was eat at the bus stop diner because we serve Ponderosa cake. And it was
So I guess it's one of those cultural phenomenons that was happening, but not many people were.
Yeah.
It was not many people were writing about it.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Keep going.
And then in contrast, the UBC cinnamon bun, has I think 42 mentions and there are whole articles.
Yeah.
and like whole, like the university has like a page about the history of
like
the cinnamon
PR
bun.
Kind of stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So then I was kind of getting a little bit, like not like frustrated, like freaking out, but frustrated in like I didn't think that this would be this hard.
Yeah.
Right.
Fair enough.
And then after that, the editor of the culture section was like, "Oh,
Sam Dubois, Supreme Cult Leader."
Yeah.
Yes.
He was like, "Oh, have you tried emailing a living human being?" And I was like, "Oh, yeah." So then I like emailed, I think it's the executive director of communications for housing. And then she said something like, "Oh, we talk a lot more about the cinnamon buns. We don't really know anything about it, but here's a quote from someone else." And then the quote from someone else, was, oh, the person was like, Ponderosa cake is actually just banana bread with chocolate chips. And then I was like so upset because I was like, it's so much more to me than that.
So do you think this is like a concerted effort to just like bury the like the Ponderosa cake? Do you think it's like just like its history is like marred and someone is like just like erasing it from like the existence or something? I don't know. Does that make sense?
Kind of, yeah.
Or do you think that like UBC food is trying to like bury the Ponderosa cake?
Well, at first I wasn't really trying to like think that way. I was like, oh, maybe it's just a coincidence, because in the email they were like, have you tried, you should try writing about our new banana bread. And I was like, I don't want to write about the banana bread. I want to write about what I want to write.
Cake,
Ponderosa
cake,
which you just called banana bread. So what? So then after doing that, I like, one of the things that I had found while I was looking on the Open Archives was they mention it a lot when they're talking about this very specific cookbook where it's like just UBC Food Services recipes. And then there was like one copy of that book in...
What's the book called?
Treats to Remember.
Okay.
So then there was one copy of that in like the Vancouver Public Libraries thing.
And then you went after that?
Yes, okay. Yeah. So then I went after that and then I looked into it, like I had it, and then like the fire alarm went off in the central branch of the library. And then we like everyone had to evacuate immediately. And then I was kind of like, okay, like I'm not going to make a big deal about this, but like if there was a conspiracy,
this would be your sign.
Yeah, this would be a sign.
So did you like come back and just like find the book was gone or something?
Oh no, I like took it out of the library.
Anyways, keep going.
And then after that, I was pretty miserable and I also did not know what to do. And then the editor again was like, have you tried asking another person? And I was
like a human being.
Yes, like a different human being. I was like, oh, right. Yes, I should do that. So then I just like sent a general email to UBC Food Services. And then someone got back to me and they were like, you can come in for a tour of the facilities where we make it.
Oh,
and
nice.
We can do an interview. And I was like, oh, awesome.
Exposé.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
So then I went down to Orchard Commons and I did an interview with the executive sous chef where right off the bat I was like, because like when I was like preparing for the interview, I was like, okay, I'm not going to go into this like thinking there's a conspiracy. And then like one of the first things I ask is like, are you trying to get rid of the Ponderosa cake? What's happening? Like, where is it going? Why? And then he like reassured me. He was like, no, it's not going anywhere. Don't worry about it. And I was like, okay, cool. So then I like ask about the history and he talks about how it's named after the Ponderosa building, but the Ponderosa building that existed before. The current Ponderosa building
no longer exists.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, so the original one no longer exists, but they do have like a couple of like residences now, right?
Yes. Yeah. But the building before was just a kitchen.
Yeah.
And then there was like a bake shop in the kitchen. And they figure that the Ponderosa cake can probably, because the building was made in 1961, and then the bake shop was, like, made in 1968, I think. So they figure that some time in between those two times is when Ponderosa cake was invented. So
that's a big time span, though.
Yes, yeah. But the 60s is better than before when I was like, we found Ponderosa cake. Yeah. It existed when the earth existed.
Did you think of like narrowing down like from there, like going like, okay, so now I have a time frame. Let me go into the archive and like see, or have you already gone through every single archive?
I had gone through every single archive.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Cool. And then just keep going with your story.
Yeah. So then we did a tour of the bake shop, and that was pretty cool because I got kind of excited because I was like, oh my god, I'm in the UBC kitchen. Like, all the food that's made is made. I'm looking at it right now. So that was pretty exciting. So then he was like, this is a Ponderosa cake. This is it. And I was like, okay, it's real. It exists. It's in front of my eyes. Awesome. So then he goes off to get some numbers, and I just watch all the people in the bake shop make all the food, or the baked food. And then he leads me out to go. And then, like, while we're going, I had, like, stopped recording on my phone because I was recording the interview before, so I could, like, write it all down. Before we go, he's like, oh, actually, even though you had asked before, we did have plans, or we were thinking of getting rid of the Ponderosa cake because it wasn't in line with the vision, but now we're not going to get rid of it. And then I was like,
But why aren't they getting rid of it anymore? I'm glad they're keeping it, but, like, I don't know. Yeah.
One of the things was in the interview we talked about was that before they had changed the granola bar, and students complained about the granola bar, and my response was, I didn't even know there was a granola bar.
There's a granola bar?
Yeah, right?
Oh, my goodness. Okay, cool. Yeah. Okay.
So then his thing was, we're not going to get rid of the Ponderosa cake because of the horrible response we got to changing the granola bar.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, but would you get rid of it? And he was like, oh, like, well, we might talk about getting rid of it in the future, but we'll
see.
Yeah, like,
for
we'll,
now.
Yeah, we'll have, like, a student-led survey. And then I was just, like, on my way. And I was like, whoa, there kind of was a conspiracy against Ponderosa cake.
Yeah, like, it feels like a weird thing to drop, like, when you're, like, off the record at that point. Oh, I guess they're not.
I started filming a little bit after.
But, like, makes sense.
Yeah.
So, like, what's, like, what's the answer? You know, like, what does this mean? Is there a future for the Ponderosa cake?
Hopefully. I would say hopefully. Because I know that just from me talking about it to literally every single person I have ever met, like all my coworkers and all of my friends and all of my friends' friends and all of my coworkers' friends and everyone in the newspaper office, and everyone who I've seen on the street and everyone on the bus, I hope that just, like, people knowing that it exists, like, people, like, maybe they'd be in Ike's Cafe, and they'd be like, oh, maybe I'll try Ponderosa cake this time. And then they'll see, like, oh, this is actually something worth eating instead of something not worth eating. Yeah. So, like, I know that's, like, cliche of being, like, or it's sort of cliche of just being, like, hopefully just talking about it will get people interested. But, like, hopefully people will, like,
hopefully.
Yeah, will know about it, and they'll be like, oh, yes, I'll try it this one time.
Cool. Anything else to add? Any insights, observations, any, like, key highlights you picked up from your investigation? What does it say about the degradation of Canadian society?
Ooh.
I mean, you don't have to answer that. Don't answer that.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, just, like, any insights at all?
If I had to pick, like, one thing that I would, like, say that I learned, I guess, from this experience is I think it's really important to, like, just, like, the little histories of everyday things. I think it's important to write those down, which can sound kind of, once again, like, cliche and silly, but then, like, someone 50 years in the future will be interested in it, and they'll want to write about it, and then they won't have to do 10 million things to learn about a single cake.
True. Yeah, write it all down, everybody.
Yes.
Yeah, paper record. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Angela. It was a pleasure.
Nice.
All right.
And we're back. That was Angela O'Donnell talking to me about the Ponderosa cake and I guess, like, a little bit of conspiracy there. But she wrote the article for the UBC. It's in this week's issue, the latest issue. You can find that issue on Stand. That's the show for the week.
Thanks to Angela O'Donnell, Jin Lee, and Patrick Gillen for coming on the show. And thanks for letting me rant about movies for 30 minutes. I could have gone on forever.
You're welcome. The episode, it will be up online if you missed part of the show or just want to check out other episodes. You can find our podcast on CITR.ca. Don't miss us too much. We'll be back in 2 weeks.
I'm Eve O'Day.
And I'm Alamdi Alanion. Enjoy your Thursday, everyone.